Give me one memory, one story from working at Advanced. Anything that pops in your
mind. Oh, man. Okay. Well, is it sad that everything I think of revolves around drinking?
Hey, Jason Zenger here. You should know more about AMT, the Association for Manufacturing Technology. They are the industry representative group that gives us IMTS and more, including bridging the gap between IT and manufacturing at their Silicon Valley AMT Tech Lab, expanding globally through their AMT Tech Centers in China, India, and Mexico, along with representation in Europe and Brazil. Custom research for strategic planning and member meetups that bring manufacturing leaders together. To join the AMT community, reach out to Chrissy Hahn at AMT at chahn@amtonline.org or discover more at amtonline.org.
Hello, Professor Payne. I'm a recruiter with Making Chips. I'm reaching out because a co-host position just opened up. And based on your experience with talking too much, I think you'd be a great fit. I'd love to have a conversation to see if this job piques your interest.
If the sound of a machine tool removing metal gets your blood pumping, then you are Metalworking Nation. This is Making Chips, where we talk all things metalworking, engineering and design, production and tooling combined with business best practices, technology, marketing, news, and new media for manufacturing professionals. Here are your hosts. Let's make some chips.
Mike, you accepted the position. Awesome.
Absolutely. If I get to hang out with you, why wouldn't I?
That's good. Yeah, the culture is a match here. You get those messages, right? Like, do you as the owner, do you still get those messages all the time?
I'm shocked how many, I guess, just automated, we got a job match for you, like either email, phone calls, text. And some days I'm tempted to reply.
It's almost exactly like that message too, right? It always has that standard.
That was pretty typical.
I Googled the recruiter message, or it'll be like, if you know someone at your company who's interested, and they're like, well, it's me. I'm interested.
Right. Well, and the other one I get, I mean, I assume probably all owners and probably a lot of non-owners get too, is really the same message that I want to buy your company.
Oh, yeah.
Or that they have a buyer for your company.
Yeah. I'm starting to get those more, but I think they're just trying to get to like my brother and my dad.
Well, you know, Nick, I spent 15 years doing that, right?
You were a recruiter?
Well, no, but buying and selling companies.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that. Yeah.
And it amazes me that they keep doing that, because I always think, like, did somebody actually reply to that? Like, I can't imagine blindly replying to, yeah, you can buy my company.
Yeah, you just like send them a quote.
Right. So, Nick, what do we have on the menu today?
Oh, I have a delectable spread for you here.
Do you?
No, I got one of my old friends. He's a young guy, but he's an old friend as a guest. He's going to be great. Talking about this topic of recruiting, we're going to start with a new segment here. You know, our buddy Paul, he's a pretty good teacher, but he's not the professor of pain.
I've learned a lot from Paul.
Yeah. Well, our audience is going to too, because we're doing this machine shop masterclass. So let's kick that off.
The day you stop learning is the day you stop growing. You live in an age of endless resources to equip and inspire you to be the best manufacturing leader you can be. But who can you trust in a world full of consultants and self-proclaimed manufacturing experts? Start with manufacturing leaders who've walked a mile in your shoes. Start with the doers who've actually made chips and made an impact. Start with a team at ProShop who have helped hundreds of shops elevate their skills, solve their problems, and grow their business. Have a seat and get out your notepad. The Machine Shop Masterclass starts now.
Marketing and sales should be a high priority for any business wanting to grow. Lack of a focus on sales and marketing is the number one reason why most manufacturers stay small or fail to deliver on the financial results desired by the owners. Making this a focus is particularly critical to machine shops and other precision manufacturers in our competitive industry. We have a term that we like to use called positive sales pressure, which is essential to the financial health and longevity of any business. Positive sales pressure means you always have more sales opportunities than your capacity, which translates into an abundance of RFQs coming into the sales pipeline. With plenty of RFQs, you can be more selective with what you quote, you can quote higher margins, and afford to win a smaller percentage of your quotes. This helps ensure a steady stream of good margin work that is always flowing into the shop. And that helps to ensure that you can always bill more revenue than your break-even amount each month, virtually guaranteeing that your fixed costs are covered and the revenue above your COGS, your cost of goods sold, of the jobs above and beyond your break-even point are contributing to a profitable month. I'm sure anyone who's in leadership of a manufacturing company knows how devastating it is to profitability where you have months where your revenue is below your break-even amount. You can have several profitable months in a row, only to have those profits wiped out by one or two slow months. It's a brutal feast or famine cycle. And it's natural when you get busy with jobs, you tend to slack off on doing new sales. So when the work ships, you're back to being slow again. We went through that cycle many more times than I care to admit at ProCNC. I hope we've conveyed the importance of being sales-driven. Okay, let's get into what to do. Get out your pencil and write down these steps to become a sales-driven company. Number one, develop a brand that will resonate with your customers. And a brand is much more than just a nice logo on a website. A compelling brand identity resonates with target customers and will compel them to learn more about your company and how you can solve their problems with your value proposition. A key here is to focus on specific niches. It's hard to appeal to any particular end customer if you take a shotgun approach and try to appeal to everyone. Number two, develop marketing materials and campaigns that effectively communicate the value proposition. The materials may include your website, printed materials, electronic media that you can email or have for download, and video content. The campaigns could include email newsletters, webinars, content marketing, social media marketing, paid advertising, search engine optimization for your website, and many others. The key is to start small and A/B test to determine what strategies, channels, and materials are the most effective, and then double down on those. If those terms are unfamiliar to you, look them up and study those to learn more. And the real key here is consistency. You must commit to doing this on an ongoing basis. Don't start and stop for a few weeks or even months at a time. Even when things get busy, you must stay the course and build the flywheel. Now that you've got a brand and marketing cadence dialed in, you also need to ramp up your sales engine. So step number three is to build a continuous, dedicated effort for your sales activities. This should be broken down into two main categories. Number one is your inbound sales, responding to the leads that your marketing activities have brought to you. It's critical to be very responsive and have great communication. You only have one chance to make that great first impression. So be quick to turn around questionnaires, RFQs, or any questions your prospects have. The second step is to develop an outbound sales motion, which can be focused on finding targeted accounts that haven't been captured by your inbound marketing. This would include networking events, trade shows, outbound calls, emails, or social media chat. Do the research about the companies you want to do work for and find the people, typically engineers and procurement, that you want to develop a relationship with. And my advice to you is to be very concise with your communication. Lead with your customers' pain points and how you can solve these problems. For example, I might have said back in the ProCNC days, "Hi, my name is Paul, and my company ProCNC specializes in machining and building turnkey assemblies for the cockpit of commercial and defense aircraft. We're AS9100 certified and have a 99.8% quality rating and a 99.5% on-time delivery rating for the past year. We would love to become your most reliable supplier and solve the headaches you probably have with your supply chain." Our last tip is to establish your company as a thought leader in the industry by publishing content that has significant value to your customers. For example, at ProCNC, we published Design for Manufacturability newsletters, or DFM newsletters, for 4 years and had an email list of thousands of engineers who subscribed. We published sales pitch-free advice on how companies could reduce the cost of their machine parts with simple changes to the designs of their parts. That developed into doing DFM boot camps for over 50 companies, bringing millions of dollars of machining business into the company. Those companies considered our shop a true partner and thought leader that they relied on for their own success. We hope this has inspired some ideas for how you can make your shop a more sales and marketing-driven company. Stay tuned for 9 more sessions of the Machine Shop Masterclass on making chips over the next many months. We'll cover topics from recruiting and team building to setup production and lean manufacturing tips and all things in between. Until then, keep those spindles turning.
Pretty cool. I'm excited about the new segment. Paul's always got good things to share with leaders of manufacturing companies. So
I know we've talked about it before, but Paul, me coming in by buying a shop into this industry, and honestly, I think I feel pretty comfortable running a shop now.
Yeah.
And it's largely because of Paul and ProShop, and, you know, just everything I've learned from his best practices.
Yeah. I mean, once you use that system, you just get locked in, and it's not just on the shop floor. He goes way beyond that with you. So I just had him join a call with my brother and I. We don't even use ProShop, just to get some advice on the software company we're looking at. So I want to introduce my buddy here. So our guest today, like I said, old friend, but a young guy. He actually started his career as an engineering intern at our company, Advanced Machine and Engineering. And then he quickly advanced to become an applications engineer, a product manager, and then eventually a regional sales manager. And then he broke my heart, man. He moved away and took another technical business development role for another company closer to where he lives. But he's not here to talk about AccuRide. He's not here to talk about linear motion, which is what he's focused on now. He is here to talk about the role he plays in recruiting manufacturing leaders. So welcome to the show, Trevor O'Malley. Good to see you, dude.
Thank you. I'll be here all night.
Yeah, he'll be here all night. Or morning, you know, whenever you're listening.
Wherever you're at, whatever you're at.
We're good. You're not drinking a cider, are you?
Nah, I have a really fancy Miller Lite.
There you go. All right.
I've got a rep. I love Wisconsin. I live in Illinois, but I love Wisconsin. I know.
So you're a Miller guy.
Yeah, I'm anti-Illinois culture, I guess. But
there you go. What's more popular out by you, Mike? Bud Light, Miller Lite? Probably Miller Lite now. I heard.
Coors, baby. It's Coors.
Yeah, I would say mostly Miller Lite. Probably. Yeah.
Oh, Miller. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, the reason why I brought up cider, one thing I love about Trevor is he and his twin brother started a content marketing platform. When did you do that?
7 years ago.
And it's called Cider Scene. So yeah, he like basically just started what, reviewing ciders? Tell us a little bit about that, because it's kind of like making chips, but a little bit
sure,
different.
Sure. Well, just like anything else, I try to expand my boundaries and learn more through doing different types of things. And Cider Scene was one of them. My brother moved to Nashville. I have a twin brother and we wanted to stay connected. So he said, hey, let's review ciders. He likes cider. And I was like, sure, I like cider too. And so we started reviewing them and it kind of grew. So then we ended up becoming a marketing company for the cider industry, hard cider industry in the United States and Canada.
So yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's super
fun. So you haven't bought a can of cider or a bottle of cider in a long time?
No, in fact, I have a treasure trove under my bar that I need to get rid of because they've expired. I try to drink them all, but I don't have enough time in my day.
Mike, I'd say we should start like Bourbon Brothers, but there's so many bourbon content plays out there. Like, there's no way we would make it.
There's some great ones too.
I think that's what's cool about what you and what's your brother's name again?
Nolan.
What you and Nolan did is like cider was kind of blowing up right when you did it. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot out there. Kind of like making chips. When we first started, we were the first legit manufacturing podcast. And I think that's a big part of why we're successful because we saw
the theme of everything. Yeah. I think you're great, but everything's about finding a niche, either a niche in the market, which we did. Cider didn't have a lot of representation, but we said, hey, let's not exploit it. Let's take that to the next level and make it approachable. And that's what we did.
Mike, he's kind of like our style dude. He's like, hey, I want to stay in touch with my brother. Let's start a little business together. Or,
yeah, that's neat.
You know, you're not actually a professional recruiter, but that's a little kind of side hustle you have and what we're going to talk about today. So
transferable skills that goes across a spectrum of things. Yep.
Heck yeah, that's awesome. So I'm going to put you on the spot first before we get into the main topic here.
Okay.
You worked with me and my family business for a while, and I'm sure there's some memories. So doesn't have to be a good one. You don't have to try to glorify us here. Actually, please don't. But like one thing, funny, stressful, awesome, whatever it is, like give me one memory, one story from working at Advanced. Anything that pops in your
mind. Oh, man. Okay. Well, is it sad that everything I think of revolves around drinking? One memory I have with you, Nick, I really liked. That's when I started integrating with you guys in the marketing department when you were kind of doing all that stuff. Yeah. We went to IMTS and you had a little rental, like Airbnb. And I went and just hung out with you guys, shot it a little bit and kind of just got to know you guys on a better level outside of work. So that was kind of one of those first times that really set to.
When I gave you some life lessons about your girl, right?
Yeah, yeah. And look, I married her and we have kids. So yeah. I'm not saying you changed the course of my life, but you might have.
No, that's awesome. It's
that's
so
a great memory. But honestly, you know, my memory just of AME as a whole and Hennig was just the flexibility, the ability to kind of do a bunch of different things and learn. I mean, that was my training grounds with you guys. So
yeah. And obviously you've made a really successful career out of yourself. So it's cool to stay in touch and everything. And someday I'll get you back.
Keep trying, man.
Awesome. Well, right now you're helping me get other people, and that's what I want to move into. So I think I'll start by kind of telling the story of like how we engage with Trevor beyond just keeping in touch as old friends. And I don't know if I've ever told you about this, but did I tell you about how we use this LinkedIn recruiter tool?
Yeah.
Okay. So like most manufacturers, we need people. Okay. Like everybody needs people. If you go around the world, it's number one on the list of problems or challenges is like, we need people. So
for sure.
And also, like most manufacturers, we have this kind of like, well, just give us the tools or give us the material and we can do it ourselves. Like you right. Scanning a dash for your...
A dash for a truck.
Old truck, right? And figuring it out. And so I think that's part of what makes manufacturers awesome. And it can also be like their downfall too. So our former president has a family member who's like a corporate recruiter. And this person was like, hey, here's what we do. You know, we all pretty much use the LinkedIn recruiter tool. Say tool, I mean, like, this is like, I think it's like $100,000 a year to have it. It's not cheap. Basically what it does, I mean, Trevor, you can speak to this a little bit more, but what it does is it kind of like unlocks that hidden part of people's profile that says like they're open to receiving messages from a recruiter. Is that what you're paying the $100K for?
Yeah, yeah, it's like, you know, filtration system, right? Or everything. So you can filter down the position, location, if they're open to working, not open to working, finding keywords in there and stuff. So it's really just the most specific way you can find someone on LinkedIn. Yeah.
It unlocks a lot of things that the free LinkedIn does not give you. That's right.
Pay to play, pay to play.
And I would say if you're an awesome recruiter, you absolutely need that tool. And we did have some success. We made a couple of hires. I found my guy in Michigan, my regional sales director in Michigan with the DIY method. But it's like you could buy a machine tool and not be a machinist. You can buy tools all the time and not really know what the hell you're doing. So we found out, I'm not saying it wasn't worth it because there was a lot of value there, but the actual act of recruiting, the skill, the art and science of recruiting, you don't get just because you buy the tool. You still got to try to figure all that out. And you still got to try to do that with a fraction of your time to like, you know what I mean? That's not my job. I'm not a recruiter. I didn't go to school for that. Nobody trained me on that. So we had some success, but we were always kind of hesitant to engage with what we call like a headhunter, right?
Or a recruiter. It feels expensive.
What's typical, Mike, like from your experience, if you were going to work with a corporate recruiter, what would be typical?
Man, I can't even remember. It's different, you know, obviously depending on the job. Mm-hmm. We do some now with placement of machinists.
Yeah.
And it's whatever hourly rate for X number of hours, then they can become ours. Or I know in the past on some...
Are you talking about like a temp agency type thing?
I don't know what it's called in that classification. I mean, Trevor probably...
Yeah, it's probably like a contract to hire type thing. So
yeah, contract
the recruiter would have you as kind of a...
I think that's the right...
These people, it's a contractor, and then they do a certain amount of hours and they kind of turn into your employee. There's all different mechanisms of doing that, right?
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, it's certainly at a premium. I haven't hesitated doing it because in our case, if I look at my fully loaded rate of my benefits, and my taxes and all that, it's usually pretty close to a wash. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not much more on the, maybe the, I don't know the right word, the professional, the white collar, whatever term you want to use there, that where you pay that finder's fee, that headhunter fee, it seems aggressive. And as the consumer of that service, I will tell you.
What do you think that percentage is?
I think we've generally paid somewhere in the maybe the 30% range. It's probably been 6 or 7 years since I've done that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't remember, but I will also tell you, anybody as a business leader can probably point back to those 5 or 6 people throughout your career that you've hired that were made you feel like a really smart person. Mm-hmm. Like I made a great hire. So one of the people on that list that I have of 5, 6 people, I got her through a headhunter, whatever the appropriate term is.
And that sounds really like a headhunter, like, holy shit. Like,
right.
Like a little bit aggressive here, a little bit horror movie style. You
know? Whatever that fee was for her, it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
I mean, she was worth every penny we paid for that.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've had a few instances where I can't say that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's been well worth the money. Like I said, it's been 5 or 6 years maybe since I've done that.
If you do the math here, it's, let's say it's 100K for that LinkedIn recruiter. That's, I think we split it 50K, 50K between Amy and Hennig. And I think we had like one recruiter account. If it was just say 30%, that sounds... Well, Trevor, what's kind of like the industry average?
Industry 30, standard, 25? It's a 25 industry standard. If you go to like a large organization, someone like a Robert Half or something like that, that's
okay. Available.
Yeah.
So like I would have to hire 4 people that made 100K, pay that times 4 for it to like kind of wash out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to do all the work and I'm not a recruiter.
Yep. Time and effort, baby. Time and effort.
We started thinking about it. You know, I made a couple hires. And it's probably not the right tool for some operational level stuff. Now, if you're a machinist and you're listening to this, you should get on LinkedIn and make a profile like 100%. Like you're an absolute executive of whatever type of machine that you run, because that's how you'll get a better job, in my opinion. You know?
100%. 100%.
Right. I think a lot of times like the production floor level employees aren't maybe on LinkedIn as much as we all hope they would be. So for me, it's more like functional leader, head of sales, head of HR, head of marketing, head of engineering, that type of thing. So, Trevor, yeah, would you agree with that?
I agree. I mean, typical white collar jobs are on LinkedIn. People in different industries aren't even on LinkedIn. Just use healthcare as an example. Anyone should really be in there and build a good profile. It's going to either present you other opportunities or you're going to at least network with people. It's always a good thing. Honestly, LinkedIn is a great tool. So, definitely should do it.
I know this isn't the point of the show here, but I will tell you, I stay pretty active on LinkedIn. I mean, I check in on it a lot and I interact quite a bit. I have a few of my machinists on it. Most of my management team's on it. When I see these young machinists or older machinists, it doesn't matter. When I see machinists on there interacting with the community, I want them. I want to recruit them to come to my shop.
Exactly.
Because if nothing else, I mean, I look at them and then I go look at their shops, right? So the marketing value that a machinist can bring their company is going to immediately increase their value to their company.
I mean, think like a Ken Parent, you know, who
Ken Parent's a great example.
Like he's working for himself and just a little small shop in his garage, but everybody knows that dude because he's out there on LinkedIn.
Right.
Putting himself out there. So yeah, I hear that for sure. And I know who you're like that profile, who you're talking about, that guy who's like, look at tabs Tuesday. Like I've set this 5X part up, or like some really challenging, you know, clearance is clearance type thing, whatever.
Right.
It's freaking cool. And it's like, yeah, he's not just pushing a button and going home and kicking his dog because he hates his life. Like he's into it.
There's 5 or 6 that if I could convince him to come to Oklahoma, I'd hire him in a heartbeat.
All right, Trevor. So one of the things we talked about, just you working with us now, and we've had a few success stories so far, is like culture, right? We're a certain type of way. Here, you know, it's a family business with a bunch of goofball brothers kind of running things. And we care a lot about targets and we like really want to do well, but we're also not taking ourselves too seriously, you know? So we have a certain culture and not everybody's a good fit for that culture. From your perspective, where you're trying to be this matchmaker, you know, almost like a matchmaker, like trying to match two people who would be dating. How do you do that?
Call me recruiting Tinder.
Yeah. How do you make sure we're swiping right on the right people?
Yeah. I love that. It's all about, you know, honestly, recruiting as a whole, people look at it as, I'm going to get a collection of resumes. I'm going to parcel through it and ship it out. That's traditional recruiting. That's not really what makes a good recruiter. Matching cultures, like you said, I think of it as business development. I want to get to know, say, in this case, you, Nick, you and Amy, get to know you guys intimately. What makes you tick? What adds value to your business? What you guys are looking for? What a cultural fit for a employee would be. And then when I go out there and I find these people, I want to make sure that they align from that standpoint. So not just talking, hey, how much money do you want? That's what everyone asks. Like you guys get those emails. You need to get to know that person. It's like building rapport, just like you would with a customer. It's absolutely no different than building relationships with customers and getting to know what they want, right? So getting to understand what they're looking for. And maybe they want a corporate business where it's no intimacy, right? There's no family relationships. Or
when you clock out, you clock out.
That's it.
Yeah. A lot of people want that, actually.
Yeah, that's true. But sometimes they want this more intimate family, understanding how you guys tick and things like that. So really, a recruiter's job is to be a matchmaker, not only from, like you said, a cultural fit, but just understanding the personalities, their relationships, what they're looking for, you know. Value matches the value. Time matches the time, you know, that type of stuff, yeah.
I love that Nick brought up culture and you talking about that. So I don't know that you know anything about my background. I bought my machine shop I have now 6 years ago. We've bought a few more since. So I'm used to inheriting people, right, with those transactions. I usually know, honestly, sometimes within a day or two, certainly within a month, if someone's going to fit my culture, right? And if I look back 6 years ago when we bought Hill, there was a handful of people I knew wouldn't fit, and they're not here anymore. You know, we didn't come in and make immediate changes. And I think in most of those cases, they left, right? Because they didn't like the culture.
Sure. It goes both ways, right?
It's almost best that way, right, Mike? It's like if you're on a blind date and you know this ain't the one, they probably know it too. So it's like,
yeah, they walk in, they look at you and walk right out.
Yeah, that's fine. Does that happen to you a lot, Trevor?
No. I luckily didn't have to deal with the dating app world, but anyways. Yeah.
Purely, I mean, I completely recognize the culture, right? And, mm-hmm. and a lot of those people I'm talking about were really, really good at their job.
Sure.
As a machinist, as a manager, mm-hmm. whatever. But let me just throw this out there because there's probably a lot of people listening. They're going to be in the same boat. So when we get off this call, probably today, and certainly before the listeners hear it, I'll be posting that I'm hiring a quality assurance, an inspector, manager, technician, whatever, someone to kind of take care of most of our inspection needs. We'll still have a quality manager, but we've got a job description. We've got the kind of the job requirements and so forth. But I think a lot of people, I think we all kind of struggle with identifying, is someone going to fit our culture? Right. So for me, I like a very entrepreneurial culture. I want, as Nick pointed out earlier, I'm a get it done type people. I'm not real big on job descriptions, silos, like this is my job, that's your job. I like a team that just, excuse my language, gets shit done, mm-hmm. whatever it takes. So given that I'm getting ready to go into that, I'm sure as soon as I post that, I'll hear from people. How do I judge that? I mean, I can see if they have the technical skills. But how do I decide does someone fit my culture? I know how I've done it, but I'm just curious from your experience.
Sure. Well, I think there's two things. I mean, one way to do it is you talk to the people you find the most qualified, and you have to come up with the concept of what your culture is, right? You have to know and be able to express that to them. And like you said, it's entrepreneurial. I know Nick definitely agrees with that. You want people that are kind of treat it like their own business. So really, being able to identify those key terms or ways you want to describe it.
Maybe like values. Different people have different values, right?
You just want to be able to kind of in a nutshell, be able to describe what your culture is and see how they feel that out. That's number one, right? You could just talk to all the most qualified candidates. The other way that I consider that could weed people out is you kind of come up with like a day-to-day or like a culture statement or something like that, that you can express to people and say, yes, we want people with these technical skills, but we also want this culture fit. And I've been seeing that a lot more in job postings, where they have kind of a description of what your day-to-day would be like, what the company's like. And that might weed people out right away.
Almost like a positioning statement, but for yourself as an employer.
That's correct, yeah. And people, I think they respect that nowadays because they want to go in, okay, I have the technical skills. I already know that. Is this a company I even want to work for? And it kind of eliminates the someone who comes in, wants to work for 2 months, see how it feels, and leaves. That's no good for anybody. So it's an open line of communication right from the beginning, if you can.
And I get that. Now I'm going to put myself in the shoes of, and I've been there.
Sure.
I need a job. Mm-hmm. Right? And you've got a job that fits my skills, maybe perfectly, maybe close enough. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm going to tell you they fit perfectly and I'm going to learn a little bit on the job.
Yeah, that's an entrepreneurial person.
That's right.
I mean, there's a point in there, though. You can tell me all about your culture. You can tell me all about your statement. And we have those things and I can share those things. But I'm going to just tell you yes.
I'm sure.
Because I need a job, mm-hmm. right? I've got a wife and kids at home that I need to take care of. So, I mean, is there a secret? Is there any, you know, like, have you ever found like that secret sauce to like kind of weed that out?
Yeah.
Well, this person really doesn't care about your culture.
Sure, sure. I suppose you can create situational questions. One of those things that you got to still take people at face value. Unfortunately, there are people that are really good, call them liars, but really good entrepreneurial is really the way.
Question answers.
They're just great. They got canned answers. They're good at it. I think creating situational, and again, that's not always the easiest thing to do, to create like a cultural question that has an answer, but certainly you can come up with some situations or dynamics or something like that.
Well, let me give you an example that we use, Trevor. So this is when we were in DIY mode with trying to recruit, and it totally backfired. And I still don't think we did. Like some of this stuff, Mike, is you just can't ever know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't really know what you got when you hire somebody for like 6 months. You know what I mean?
No, actually, I completely agree with you, except sometimes you do.
Right? Yeah. I mean, sometimes you know right away and you try to like lie to yourself, like you're in denial.
And you
like,
just play.
Because like maybe that girl you went on that date with is really attractive and you're just like trying to convince yourself that she doesn't suck and she just always did.
Yeah. No, she's fine.
She's great. She's great. I'll change. It's my fault, right?
Yeah. Okay.
No, but here's an example. We're recruiting regional sales role, which is typically what I do. And we were down to two candidates. Mm-hmm. And one guy had like a metrology degree and was pretty smart. And the other guy had like a little bit of adjacent experience and was just a super nice dude. He was like the guy you wanted to have a beer with. And we all know like in sales, especially this kind of sales, like Trevor, you were an applications guy and you're a perfect example. Like you're technical enough to never be like, who's this guy from an engineer? You are an engineer. And then also you're relatable, you know, you can connect with people. You're someone you'd want to have a beer with. So we kind of had this like either or. Mm-hmm. The one guy that was like really easy to get along with kept calling our products like chippers. You know, we make chip conveyors. He's like, yeah, you know, I could sell some chippers. And it's like, nobody says that. And that was a little bit of a red flag.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
If you go into Hill Manufacturing and try to sell someone a chipper, he's going to kick you outside and tell you to cut down a tree.
Actually, you know? I might like that. Right. Point taken.
And so,
it was an arborist, clearly. Yeah.
And then the other guy, so we're like, what do we do? So we put together all these situational questions and it was like, stuff where there's no like clear yes or no answer. And the one guy we ended up hiring was just like really good at answering this question.
Sure, sure.
And it's like, man, when you put that in front of him, he thought about it. He answered him really well. And so we just hired that guy. And, you know, back to this, like some of this is just luck. And here's my takeaway. Actually, thinking about it, this is my takeaway. I will never hire a person again that I haven't had dinner with and spent time with.
Yeah, right. You need to spend time.
Because all of this was the region that was far away from home. And after we made the hire, the first time I went out to dinner with this guy, I was like, oh boy, I messed up.
No, okay. So, you know, for everybody listening on here, we hire a large variety of people, right? And there's some level of people we hire at Hill that's probably not going to happen every time. I mean, I'd love for it to, it just can't.
You mean going to dinner every time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because for me, it's like, 12 roles, they're all director level or above.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't work for every organization.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great point. You know, there was a guy a couple of years ago, I was 100% on board hiring him as a salesman. Mm-hmm. And I've been pushy back and forth whether or not I needed to hire a salesman. That doesn't matter. I mean, we need one, but did we need one full time was kind of the question. But this guy, I was really impressed with this one person that we work with. And I thought, man, if he ever becomes available, I want him. Well, he became available. I was actually leaving the country for 2 weeks and he had reached out and I said, look, I'm leaving the country. Let me connect with you when I get back. By the time I got back, he'd accept another job. I was kind of kicking myself that I didn't just say when he called, I didn't just say, okay, you know, I'll see you when I get back. Mm-hmm. I'll be in the office. Mm-hmm. 2 months later, I happened to be paired with him at a golf tournament, spent 4 hours with him. And if he worked for me, I would have not been happy.
Sure. Been one of those 9-iron to the neck things, right?
Yeah. And, you know, so, I mean, I think it is, I think to your point, I mean, it's critical to have those discussions. Yeah. And Nick, like when we're buying companies, you know, when we're looking at the person that's going to run it, I mean, that is something we do, right? Like we're going to spend some time. We're going to take you and your spouse to dinner to...
That's a huge one, too. You're marrying the guy's family.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The guy or girl's family. You're marrying that whole thing, mm-hmm. You know? So
yeah, you know, especially someone that's going to run a company, right? Like, mm-hmm. I really want...
Or a division really or a region.
Or a division or... Just your manager. You know, I mean, not just your manager. That's an important role. But anybody just... You're going to be relying on 24/7, mm-hmm. right? I think that's critical. Just that time with not only them, but their family... To just really understand, like, is this guy going to be or gal going to be getting a call at 4:30 every day going, when are you going to be home and going to be in trouble when it's like, I've got to stay tonight because we've got a problem. It might be 8, 9, 10 o'clock tonight before I get home. Mm-hmm. And it is not necessarily a bad thing, but you want to know that going
right.
Into it, right.
Right. So Trevor, it's funny when we talk, I'm always like, hey, just find me another you, dude.
Yeah.
What I mean is like,
oh, it's tough though. Yep.
Engineering kid, got a degree, isn't like, oh, people talking, you know, like right. Can connect to people. Engineer. Sure. Right. Like beep, 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 beep. That's hard to find with that mix. And so it's like the other thing, the other dynamic here is typically we're a podcast for manufacturing leaders. Manufacturing leaders have jobs. That's why they're leaders. They're not like unemployed. Like, man, I can't get a job as a applications guy for a machine tool company. You know, if someone tells you that, you're either terrible at your job or, you know, something's wrong here. Something's wrong. Everybody needs that, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to go after people who are employed, it's a little different than like what you said when you brought up the traditional receive resumes and then filter through them and say, okay, do you want a job? So how do you go about that kind of, you know, like back to the dating, a lot of this is like dating. Like you go up to a girl, you talk to her at a bar, you're like, man, that's a good looking girl. She's probably got a boyfriend. How do I even start this conversation? You know?
Sure. I really relate this all to business development type aspects, right? So when you're talking to a candidate, say they got a, you know, I think you're kind of alluding to someone who has a job already or someone has a good job, right? And you're trying to, you're like, this is the guy I need, right? Well, again, it's getting in contact with them, talking to them and really understanding, just like you would anything else, right? What values they have, what needs, what wants, what pain points they have, just like a customer you're selling to. What's your pain point? It takes a little bit of massaging to get this out of people, but really understanding what their next 5 years looks like, what they're looking for, what they actually value. Maybe they have a great job in terms of day to day and they get paid well, but there's always a pain point. And if there's not, then they're not the right fit for you, right?
Hang on to that because I want to ask you about the compensation part, but part of me, sure. While you're answering, I'm realizing you're reaching out as a recruiter.
Correct. Yep.
It's a little weirder when you're reaching out as some dude who thinks you should work for them and he knows you have another job.
Yeah, it's a dilution.
Maybe that's why you should use a recruiter.
Well, I think the dilution point really helps. And then you got multiple stages, right? So we're talking again about finding people for culture fits.
Yeah.
If I'm asking questions and I know that they're BSing me, I'm not going to even present them to you. If they get past my radar, which is different from maybe you may, Mike, your radar, right?
Yeah.
And you ask them a whole nother set of questions. It's much harder to BS two people who have different points of view than it is just one person, right? So recruiting also adds this like dilution point that makes it a little bit more comfortable, right? I can ask more uncomfortable questions.
That's your job. You should be reaching out to people. For me, exactly, yeah. If I'm reaching out to somebody and being like, hey, do you like your job? You know, like,
sure. Dude, yeah, what? It might be a little odd, or they'd be like, oh, this guy really wants me. I can take him to the bank. Whereas I can go dig in a little bit more, find out what they're looking for. And I can say, oh, I don't have this job for you, but I might have this job for you. There's just a little bit more angle to work with. Mm-hmm. And then I can feed it to you if I think that hits all the boxes, right? So
yeah, it just that kind of right? 1 degree of separation or whatever, I think
it's not good. 2 degrees or more. It helps for sure. Yeah,
sure. As you're talking, I'm thinking like almost more important than understanding, maybe not more, but equally important to understanding if you fit with the candidate is if you're going to work through a recruiter, do you fit with them? In our world, chipper is like not what people say, right? Maybe that guy would have been great. Who knows? I ended up getting an awesome guy after both of those dudes, so I'm happy. But like that radar of like nobody says chipper. People call it a chip conveyor. And
sure.
I get messages from headhunters like literally 5 days a week. They're good at getting people messages. That's part of what they do.
Sure.
But with you, like mostly because I have a unique advantage, you worked at our company, right? You know everything about this world because you were on our sales team.
Sure.
But I know you know like what people should say. You know the difference between a mill and a lathe. You don't call it a lathe.
You know what I mean? That lab is going really, yeah.
Like, so when we're working with you, it's like, oh, this dude gets it. And I think that market fluency, that industry fluency is just, and that relationship is so important because you're not going to bring me something that's going to waste my time.
Sure.
So that's hard to find, man.
It is hard to find. So industry specific recruiting, there are large organizations that have people in the right position, right? They're technical recruiters for manufacturing. But if you're going to date a recruiter, right, you want to bring someone on, you should ask them questions that you would typically be asked and see if they know the answers. If they don't, they're probably not a good fit. And most recruiting firms, especially large ones, that chair is getting turned over. These people don't really have the hands-on experience. That's where I think we add value because I'm approaching companies, hey, can I recruit for you? When I have it either, I mean, in your case, analogy or culture, which isn't common, but do I understand your business, the type of positions you're going to want to fill? That is so important, finding the right recruiter.
Because like, what is manufacturing?
Sure. Yeah.
Metalworking manufacturing is this kind of like little niche inside that broader manufacturing. And so, when someone's like, oh, we specialize in industrial recruiting, like in what is, okay, if manufacturing is a term that kind of means everything but nothing, industrial is even worse.
Oh, yeah, it could be anything, right? So, I think being specific in all of these, right, when it comes to the recruiter you're getting, they should have some knowledge of your type of business, at least somewhat specifically, so that they can find the right people. And if they don't, they're probably going to be sending you a bunch of crap. And again, for you, Nick, I know your culture, but that's not typical. But on an intake call, if I understand your business, what you're looking for, the type of jobs that you do, maybe you're a job shop that does something specific, that is so important. And being able to articulate that to people so that they can find the right candidates is pretty necessary. And I think this is what gets a bad taste in the mouth. And for a lot of companies like yourself, who are like, oh, I'm a headhunter, let me help you. And you go, what do you know about me, right?
Well, that's what caused us to do the DIY thing initially. It was like, we just need to know who is like willing to receive a message about opportunity for a new job. That's what we needed. We were like, yeah, just get us that tool. And I think the more we learn about it, it's like, it's more than a tool. There's a whole skill to it. I'm not going to ask you to share all your secret sauce or anything, but there's a skill to selling machine tools. There's a skill to buying companies, if you're Mike, or selling machine parts. There's an art and a science to all this stuff. And you don't just get a machine tool and become an expert machinist. You know what I mean? You don't just have a product to offer and like sell a mill, work holding or whatever it is. So I think that's, in hindsight, we kind of, oh, we can do this. And we did get a couple people, but it's like recruiting's a thing, man.
Well, it's
you
a
know,
skill set.
As a serial entrepreneur, it's no different than everything you go through as a business owner and entrepreneur. You can do it all yourself because you care, you want to, you have to, whatever. However, to really grow and expand, you need professionals in those roles, right? Just like I was mentioning earlier about sales. My company's not at a point where I need a full-time salesperson. I and others can fill that role in this temporary mode. At some point, for me to really grow and expand, I need a professional salesperson that knows how to sell machined parts, whether it's an accountant, whether it's a quality manager, like I was talking about, we're in the market for it. You have to have professionals involved. And in this case, and if you want to bring the best to the best to the table and you can't afford to hire a full-time recruiter, you need to have a headhunter recruiter, you know, whatever, temporary recruiter, whatever the right word there is. And that's how to identify. That's true of all aspects of our business.
Well, once you get to a certain size, it's like, hey, we should employ this person. But maybe in that interim layer where it's like, I don't know how many jobs I'm going to need to find right now. And it's like variable versus fixed cost. It's like hire a manufacturer's rep or employ a direct sales guy. You know what I mean? There's always some sort of paradigm on when it makes sense for whatever you're looking to do. And I think regardless, if you're going to work with a recruiter, you have to make sure that that person knows the words you use, knows how a shop's supposed to smell, the words somebody's supposed to say and how they're supposed to say them. You know what I mean? Because what's an engineer? What's a manufacturer? What is manufacturing? What is industry? These things are all so broad. A chemical engineer and a mechanical design engineer are not the same thing. And yeah, it's just tough to find.
That's a takeaway for me, because I will be honest, we get weekly visits, regular cold calls, not necessarily cold calls, from recruiters in our market on a regular basis about machinists, about, you know, all sorts of skilled labor positions. And I mean, if I'm honest, I blow them off, right? Like I let somebody else, they very seldom get past the front desk. So maybe I shouldn't be surprised when they don't find me the right people, right? Because I haven't spent time with, and I haven't explained to them the type of people I'm looking for.
Intake calls are super important. I would just say, you know, caution people as business owners or people in positions that have.
So hey, when you say intake call, what is that?
Just for sure, which I'll kind of break into. So imagine you're picking a supplier for something that you guys are doing, right? You're going to talk to them. You're going to ask them what their capabilities. You're going to listen to them and say, this guy either knows what he's talking about or not. When you're working with a recruiter, it's important not just to sign on the dotted line. It's to have a hour long, maybe a couple hour long, again, maybe out for lunch or a couple different sessions to understand their skill set. Are they BSing you? Do they know what they're talking about? Can they talk the talk? Do they understand the lingo? Do they know your area, right? That could be a whole nother thing. Do they even know the region you're talking about? Those type of things, just like you would do as a supplier, you need to be intimate on that stuff. You can't just in good faith go, that's a huge organization. I know they have the resources. They'll probably take you to the cleaners or just send you a bunch of resumes that they have. So
yeah, that's a super good point. And I even liked how you said, like, do they even know the region? The same job in a different region
they might
could
have no
be
idea.
Totally different dynamics. Exactly. Because of cost of living or like the type of companies that are around there. A machinist in Wichita is different than a machinist in wherever, right? Because I always think of it, Wichita, as like aerospace land, you know? So it's just oil and gas land is different than aerospace land, which is different than screw machine stuff. So good point there. And I thought it was an awesome episode. I'm glad we had you on. Just for the audience, we asked for the three R's: rate, review, refer it to somebody. So if you're like pretty much everybody I talk to and you're struggling to find the right people, maybe it's operational role and this isn't really the exact conversation for it, but maybe it's a functional leadership role or a sales division or a sales region or whatever. We'd love to talk. I mean, reach out to us. We can connect you with Trevor and see where this goes. But I've had a lot of success. Typically, the way Making Chips works for me is if I need to learn something or if I did learn something, I want to share it or I want to have somebody on as a guest. So happy to have you on, Trevor.
I really appreciate it, guys.
Thanks for your stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Trevor.
So yeah, it was great. Maybe we'll have you and Nolan on one time and talk about cider or something.
I got so many other things to talk about, man. Just I'm a serial entrepreneur, like Nick said. That's how I like to think about it.
So if you need cereal, Trevor's got you.
That, I will be honest, I'm not an expert in, see? Not a culture fit.
Mike, how do we end the show, man?
Well, if we can't get people, can't make chips, and if we're not making chips,
we're not making money. Bam.